That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners, and happy Friday. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the November 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off with African football. South Africa's national men's team, nicknamed Bafana Bafana, is coming off back-to-back victories against Sao Tome and Principe in the qualifying competition for the 2022 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Cameroon. Now, Sao Tome agreed to play both matches in South Africa. The South Africans won 2-0 in Durban and 4-2 in Port Elizabeth. As a result, Ghana and South Africa now lead Nations Cup qualifying Group C with 9 points each from 4 qualifiers. Sudan has 6 points, and Sao Tome, with no points, has officially been eliminated. For reaction to the victories by South Africa, Iron Mike Mbonye called Johannesburg, where he reached African football analyst Clyde Tu.
I think the general feeling or sentiments around the country is everyone is happy with the 6 points, but not happy with the process. I think Bafana made it look difficult more than it should have been. I mean, we are ranked way too higher than Sao Tome. We shouldn't be struggling to beat teams like Sao Tome. But anyway, I think it's football at the end of the day. The game is not played on paper. It's played on that green surface. And I think Sao Tome came to compete, and they really gave us a fright. But at the end of the day, 6 points was all that the national team went into those two games looking for, and they got it. So I think it's congratulations to Malifi and his team.
With 9 points from 4 matches, do you think Bafana Bafana are sure of an AFCON ticket?
With 9 points from 4 matches, are we guaranteed of an AFCON ticket? I'll say not 100% sure. It's rather better to win our games and not worry about what happens from the other games. I think that will be the thinking that Malifi will be having going to those games. Looking at it, we just need to beat either Ghana or Sudan at least, and then try to get a draw in the other game. That will be better for us. That will mean we don't have to rely on other games to worry about our AFCON fate.
Do you also think that Ghana or Sudan will be an obstacle in the remaining matches for the Bafana Bafana of South Africa?
I think Ghana is the easier game compared to Sudan. I say so, and I'm sure a lot might disagree, but Ghana is we go into that game as underdogs, so which makes it easier for us because we don't need motivation. And I think any coach will tell you that a game against the bigger team or a team where you're underdogs is the much easier game because not much is expected from you. Then that's where you can, without any pressure on your shoulders. And I think the game against Ghana gives Bafana that going as underdogs, less pressure, and it makes it easier for Malifi to even motivate players. It doesn't need to say any word. It just says it's the Black Stars of Ghana. Let's go and prove ourselves. While Sudan, I think that's a tricky game. I know in the first leg we beat them 1-0, and they'll be coming for revenge. And fresh from beating Ghana, I think their tails are high up, and already looking at the log standings with 6 points, they will think, look, if we beat Bafana and obviously go on and beat Sao Tome, then it becomes the AFCON ticket for them. So I think Sudan is the most crucial game in the last two for Bafana. They will need to pitch, they will need to arrive in full. I think for the games against Sao Tome, probably they went with some of relaxation. They went into that games with a lapse of concentration, thinking, wow, it's just Sao Tome. I saw a friend saying that instead of making VAR discussions, we are busy googling where is Sao Tome. So I think a lot of people didn't expect what Sao Tome did, and Bafana should have taken lessons from that, especially going to the Sudan game. It won't be easy, compared to Ghana. Ghana becomes, I think, is an easier game because there's no need to motivate anyone for that game. You need to just pitch on the day and give 300% of your effort. So yeah, I think if I am to make my predictions, I think we'll beat Ghana 2-1 and maybe draw with Sudan 1-1, or if perhaps even lose to Sudan 1-0. But I think between the two games, Sudan is more difficult than Ghana.
That's African football analyst Clyde Tu. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Sporty greetings. This is Clyde Tu, an African football analyst. You're listening to Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you.
In the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Thanks, Haiti. That's my VOA colleague, Haiti Fitzpatrick. Haiti is originally from Cape Town, and she's a proud graduate of the University of South Africa. South Africa-born athlete Zola Budd is about to release a new book, which she says exposes allegations of sexual harassment, bullying, and cover-ups in the world of track and field. Her memoir, Everyone Knows My Name, also covers her controversial collision with American runner Mary Decker at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles. Zola Budd celebrated her 54th birthday on May 26th. On that day, VOA's Gwen Uten did a special birthday tribute about Budd's athletic life. And Gwen joins us once again with an encore presentation. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Zola Budd was born 54 years ago, and like many children growing up in South Africa, she walked and ran in her bare feet. And Budd was still running barefoot in high school when she was deemed a natural talent. By the time she turned 18 in 1984, she ran the women's 5,000 meters in record-breaking time. But Budd's appearance at the Olympic Games that same year will go down in history as a defining moment in her career. Budd spoke to Reuters News just days before her birthday and said she entered the 84 Olympics feeling like an outsider.
I felt like before the Olympic Games in 1984, I felt it didn't matter. Even if I'd won the gold medal, it wouldn't have mattered because I'd still be branded in a way, or an outcast. So I couldn't win either way. So for me, it was a lose-lose situation, the whole 1984 Olympic Games.
From 1964 to 1988, South Africa was barred from participating in the Olympic Games because of its policy of racial segregation. So the London-based Daily Mail newspaper encouraged Bud's English father to persuade the teenager to apply for British citizenship. As a result, Bud circumvented South Africa's Olympic boycott and instead ran for Great Britain.
I think that was probably the worst decision of my life, to run the Olympic Games. But then at that time, me and my coach didn't really have a choice. It was part of the contract, it was Daily Mail. So in a way, I had to do that. But looking back at it, I think it was way too early in my career. I didn't have enough experience running competitive races at that level. And I was still very young, coming from South Africa. So yeah, I don't think emotionally I was ready for such a big experience like the Olympic, especially with all the political upheaval accompanying that and all the pressure around that.
What followed became one of the most controversial moments in Olympic history. Bud took her mark in the 3,000-meter event alongside competitor and American world champion Mary Decker. Decker set a fast pace at the start with Bud close behind, and the two women were in front of the pack when Decker came in contact with one of Bud's legs. But despite being knocked slightly off balance, Bud maintained a close position with Decker. But after a second contact, the two women collided for a third time that sent Decker to the ground and out of the race. Bud was able to continue on, but she finished in seventh place. The incident made headlines worldwide, and Bud is still in disbelief at the enormity of the event.
There was nothing else happening. Was the Russians not competing in the 84 Olympics, so the American media had to find something to hype the Olympic Games up, and obviously me and Mary, and it was a good story for them, and the story was bigger than the real thing. For me, the whole incident was Mary just went overboard, I think, with the press and how people handled it, and it was just another race.
But Bud is quick to add her career did not end with that infamous race.
People think my career ended with the Olympic Games in 84, but I mean, 85, I had my best running career. 85, 86, I won the World Cross Country Championships twice, and 85, I had a really good year on the track, and then I raced with Mary on the track quite a few times that year, and she helped me run all my best times that year. So, yeah, I don't want to be defined by the 84 Olympics, but I think that's what people mostly remember.
Well, Bud might be remembered for the 84 Olympics, but she will always be regarded as an incredible athlete. She still holds junior world records from the mile to the 3,000 meters that have gone unbeaten for nearly four decades. And she's found success as a marathoner. She's won two marathons in the United States, where she now lives. And in 2007, she won a title back home in South Africa. In fact, her swift feet have made a cultural impact on her birthplace, along with having a street named after her. Taxis in her hometown of Bloemfontein are nicknamed Zola Buds for their speed and velocity. And that is all from me. Back over to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. And this VOA history note, Music Time in Africa is the Voice of America's longest-running English language program. It was founded in 1965 by the late, great Leo the Music Man Sarkeesian. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Samson Omale joins us now with a package of African sports news. And Samson says he'll be kicking off with a look at the recent Africa Cup of Nations football qualifying matches played across the continent.
We begin with a look at the qualifiers for the CAF 2022 Nations Cup after match day four. Holders Algeria, 2019 runners-up Senegal, Tunisia and Mali all booked their place in the next edition of the Total African Cup of Nations with two match days to spare. Meanwhile, four teams, namely Chad, Sao Tome and Principe, Togo and Eswatini, can no longer qualify to the finals. After the conclusion of match day four fixtures, a total of 24 matches were played over the 12 groups, seeing 8 wins for the home sides, 9 draws and 7 away victories. A total of 46 goals were scored. Staying with the AFCON 2022 qualifiers, Nigeria's sports minister, Sunday Dare, has questioned the competence of Super Eagles coach Gernot Rohr following the 2 draws against Sierra Leone in the 2021 AFCON Cup of Nations qualifiers. The Super Eagles could only take 2 points from 2 games against Sierra Leone. The first, which held on Friday, November 13th, was more disappointing as Nigeria's national team squandered a 4-0 lead to draw the game 4-4 before a goalless draw 4 days later away at Freetown. Now the Minister of Youth and Sport is insisting that his ministry has the power to reposition the senior male national football team for optimal performance.
We're going to sit back. We're going to review what has happened. We'll review the entire team. We'll look at our players, whether they're qualified or not, whether they're ready for the team. We'll also look at the technical advisor. We'll also look at the entire people involved with football administration and the Super Eagles. You see, when you fail to do the necessary check, then you run the risk of repeating the failures and the disappointments. That's what I mean.
And now to athletics, where the Ugandan Athletics Federation has launched the 2021 Olympic Games calendar. As the curtains come down on the 2020 season on November 28th, with the National Mountain Running Championships set to be held in Kapachua, the 2021 calendar will start with the first track and field trials slated for January 23rd, 2021 in Kampala. The federation has also lined up 15 track and field local competitions and 4 international events in the 2021 season geared towards assisting more athletes to qualify for the Olympic Games. Dominic Otochet is the president of the Uganda Athletics Federation.
By the time we go for the Olympic Games, we'll have had part of the Diamond League series start and also the continental tours. Those championships will also enable our athletes to qualify.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Dare, Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
One of my top Sunny Side of Sports salutes of the week goes to the Bright Stars, the nickname of South Sudan's men's national football team. Yes, you might say the Bright Stars shine brightly, beating neighbor Uganda 1-0 for their first victory in the 2022 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying competition. Our VOA sports fans will remember South Sudan gained independence in 2011, making it Africa's youngest country. Let's listen in again to the post-match report from Kampala by Magume Davis Rakawinge.
The South Sudan's Bright Stars put up a spirited fight to beat the Uganda Cranes at Nyayo Stadium in Nairobi, Kenya, and earned their 3 points to remain in contention for a place at the Cameroon 2022 AFCON Finals. Striker Tito Okello Odong put experienced Ugandan custodian Dennis Onyang in the wrong direction, score penalty in the 35th minute, sending the Bright Stars celebrations. Earlier on, Ugandan midfielder Khalidi Ocho was given a straight card for a foul play to give the South Sudanese a numerical advantage. Despite a man less, the Ugandans kept pressing for an equalizer, but South Sudanese remained solid and guarded the lead. Peter Makair Manyang, South Sudanese captain, praised his teammates for the teamwork.
We knew how Uganda play, and also we knew that they are a bit slow and they were faster than them. We thought of hitting them in the counter-attacks because we had the strikers that are fast. And surely we did win because of our game plan.
A handful of South Sudanese players have played or play in Uganda's domestic league, and the two countries have competed at several junior and senior levels. Manyang says he believes the win will propel them to win the remaining two games and qualify to the finals.
This win is very important for us because it has given us more chances of qualifying again, and we hope possibly to the next two coming games. Surely, with the boys and with the team spirit we have got now, I hope for the best in the upcoming two games.
The South Sudan team will have to play the next game without Musa Abdallah, who was also dedicated for foul play on Ugandan winger Emmanuel Okwi. Jonathan McKinstry, the Uganda Cranes coach, admits the best team of the day won.
Ultimately, we weren't good enough. That's a very simple answer. But we weren't good enough, and you know, I take full responsibility for that as a coach. You know, we plan for the games, we train, and we go about, and the players do their best to, and the coaching staff do their best to implement the game plan that I set for them, and you know, we haven't been up to power.
Uganda sports analyst Dalen Teyune blames Uganda's loss on complacency but Uganda Cranes.
The loss for the Uganda Cranes to South Sudan was one, a shaming, by the virtue of the fact that the Uganda Cranes have elevated to a level where they can now dine with the big continental football wigs. Losing to South Sudan, I think they lost a bit of their respect on the continent. But nonetheless, on the other hand, I think the result is an awakener that it's a long road to the Africa Cup of Nations.
McKinstry says the red card in the first half hugely affected the game, but he says he's optimistic the Uganda Cranes will win the coming games and qualify for their third successful AFCON finals.
We took this match seriously, we prepared seriously for it, but for whatever reason, we've not got it right. And, you know, congratulations to South Sudan. You know, we know it's not good enough, and so we have to apologize for that. You know, for the people back at home in Uganda, they deserve better. Uganda as a footballing nation is one that is, you know, there's huge talent there. The players are passionate about the game, and you're starting to see more and more players go and play at high levels of the game. But we need to make sure we harness that. But we need to make sure when they put that shirt on, for that red shirt of the Uganda Cranes, that we maximize their impact.
In another group game, Burkina Faso picked an away point of Malawi Flames in Blantyre to top Group B with 8 points. Uganda remains on 7 points, Malawi has 4, while South Sudan lies bottom with 3 points. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports birthday salute to Anthea Stewart, a member of Zimbabwe's national women's field hockey team that won the gold medal at the 1980 Olympics in Moscow. Anthea is celebrating her 76th birthday on this Friday. Stewart was born in Blantyre, Malawi, and she also represented South Africa in field hockey between 1963 and 1974. The story of that gold medal winning Zimbabwe field hockey team is a good one. because of the boycott of the Moscow Games by the United States and other countries. A late request was sent to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe's team was assembled less than a week before the field hockey competition started. And to everyone's surprise, they won the gold medal. Happy birthday to Olympic champion Anthea Stewart of Zimbabwe. And that wraps up the November 20th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in, and have a nice weekend, everyone. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
I'm Rick Pantaleo. Mark Leghorn, former U.S. ambassador, now chief policy officer of the Friends of the Global Fight Against AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, joins host Carol Castiel and me for Press Conference USA. We'll discuss his organization's recommendations for the incoming Biden administration regarding global health security and pandemic preparedness. Listen this Saturday and Sunday for Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Issues in the News, moderator Shayna Estulin and a panel of experts as they analyze the top stories of the week, including drug company Moderna says its vaccine appears to be 94.5% effective against COVID-19, a claim similar to Pfizer's. Both companies are on track to seek permission for emergency use in the U.S. Issues in the News, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sickle cell disease is an inherited condition that, if left untreated, kills 80% of children born with it before they reach their fifth birthday. In sub-Saharan Africa, where 75% of cases occur, every year about 300,000 infants are born with the disease. Taking advantage of decades of experience that comes from battling sickle cell disease among its own population of African Americans, the United States is partnering with countries in sub-Saharan Africa that have the largest number of people suffering from the disease. There are a couple of approaches we can use, said Brett Girois, a pediatric doctor and admiral in the United States Public Health Service, who currently serves as the Assistant Secretary for Health at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
We could mitigate the effects of the disease. We could treat people like we treat all other conditions. And we could do that very simply. If we give penicillin and vaccines, we know we can get children who die before age 5 up into their 20s with nothing else, probably into their 30s or 40s. If we do hydroxyurea, very, very cheap, and some pain control and simple measures, there's no reason that people can't live to their 40s and 50s.
Now we can also take advantage of treatments that deal with a genetic defect in the blood. That's important because a human being replaces his or her red blood cells every 90 days.
You could correct the gene defect in the bone marrow, and all of a sudden people with sickle cell will start pumping out normal cells. That is not science fiction. That's being done in clinical trials right here in the United States, and it has a potential for being scalable to hundreds of thousands or millions of people.
Admiral Girois believes that within 10 years, we could see relatively inexpensive, accessible treatment that would enable people with sickle cell disease everywhere to lead normal lives. There has never been a time in history that there's been so much activity and excitement about helping people with sickle cell disease, he said. There's never been this opportunity, and we want to seize it. And the time is really right. Just think about that. 9 million children by 2050 that we can save, have them happy, safe, productive lives for their countries, for them to raise families on their own.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello.
This is James Butte, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all, and it's happening right here.